Welcome to Zuma Worldwide's Health Education Conference Call. This recording is for educational purposes only. The name brand products referenced are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or mitigate any disease or illness. Health testimonies represent the personal experiences of the individuals and should not be viewed as medical advice. Please enjoy today's call.
For those of you who have been paying attention to the media a little bit lately, one of the things that hopefully you're excited about, I know I am, is that for the first time in very long time, in fact, maybe even in my majority of my lifetime, finally, we've got somebody who is heading up our FDA and our Health and Human Services that is really focused on making sure that we as a society have better options for achieving a better outcome, and that is, of course, better health, right? So one of the things that just was talked about in the media, I think yesterday, was the FDA is banning two artificial food dyes, and its plan is to eliminate the rest. Now, this is kind of cool, and probably for some of us, maybe all of us listening to this, somewhat common sense, right? Artificial food dyes, synthetic food dyes specifically, probably aren't the smartest thing for our health. So the officials at the government agency are banning two colorings. One is called citrus red, number two. The other one's called orange B, currently used to color things like hot dogs or sausages and various other different types of food. And the order is that they are asking companies to remove those and eliminate these other dyes by the end of 2026. Now, that seems still like a long way away. But, you know, unfortunately, the reality is they've been in our food supply for a long time. In fact, you've probably already heard it talked about when this topic comes up in the media that, you know, we're one of very few countries in the world that still allows some of the crazy amounts of chemical and synthetic additives into our food supply. There's so many other places around the world where so many of the things that we allow in our food supply here in the United States are banned in other countries. But what I love about what they're doing right now is they're using children's health as the driver. Not because it isn't just as important for us as adults, but a lot of people are more emotionally tied to the reality that, you know, our kids that are coming up in the world today are in really rough shape health-wise compared to kids from previous generations. And much of that has to do with so much of the junk that is in our food supply and the highly processed foods. So what's interesting is one of the reasons they're pulling these synthetic dyes, artificial dyes, out of the food supply and they're making this a focus is because there was a randomized trial that they're citing that found that artificial dyes in the diet of children resulted in increased hyperactivity, and specifically in the studies, it cited 3-year-olds, 8-year-olds, and 9-year-olds. And, of course, Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy is the one who's behind this. But what's interesting, and this is where we're going to take this call today because I want you to understand what really goes on behind the scenes because most people don't know this, but there's a lady by the name of Melissa Hochstadt. She's the president and CEO of the Consumer Brands Association, and that's the association that represents most major food and drink manufacturers. And she said in a statement after this announcement was made about banning these synthetic colorings that the additives have been studied and demonstrated to be generally recognized as safe. Now, I'm going to focus in on that. Generally recognized as safe, which is commonly known as GRAS, G-R-A-S, that's the abbreviation, generally recognized as safe, status. Now, GRAS status is something that oftentimes companies will point to when they talk about the ingredients in their products, and they'll say it's FDA GRAS status. So what that implies to the unknowing consumer is that, hey, these are ingredients that have been approved by the FDA and are generally recognized as safe. So they're good. You're okay. By the way, that includes a bunch of stuff that you probably already know is not good. That includes a lot of the additives that we see in the food supply today that, again, are common. But again, if you've been in the health and wellness industry for any length of time, you already know these aren't the most ideal things to be putting in your body. As an example, based on the topic today, artificial and synthetic, many of them petroleum-based food dyes and coloring. But what a lot of people don't realize is that the FDA approves new food ingredients in one of three ways. Okay, there's basically three pathways that a company who's bringing these different ingredients into their food supply that they sell in the marketplace. The first one is the one that most people think every company has to do. And from a consumer safety standpoint, this is by far the best option, and that is where the FDA goes and does a review of the chemical or the food additive and determines that it's safe before it's used in any food that we're going to buy off our store shelf. Now, here's the reality. Very few companies are going to seek the FDA review for a new food chemical or additive in that way. And why is that? Because there's actually two other ways, commonly called loopholes, that you can go if you are a food manufacturer and you have some new chemical or new coloring or new dye or new additive that you want to put into your food. You can go a different route. And this goes way back to 1958. In 1958, there was they called a food additive amendment to the Food and Drug and Cosmetic Act, and it really created a loophole for food ingredients to be generally recognized as safe, exempting them from FDA approval requirements. So this exemption was originally, again, think this is 1958, was intended to allow common food ingredients, say like vinegar or flour or baking soda or standard spices at the time back in the 50s, to bypass all of the red tape it would take of safety reviews to become available to food manufacturers to add to their food. So again, if we think back to 1958, we had a much, much different food supply, and it was a much healthier, much better food supply. We didn't have the kind of crazy additives and chemicals and synthetic materials that we find in our food supply today. So back in 1958, when this was passed, it was perfectly fine and it made sense. But in that statement and that food additive amendment, it states that for a substance to be GRAS, again, generally recognized as safe, it has to be among experts qualified. I'm going to quote it right out of the documentation. Among experts qualified by scientific training and experience to evaluate its safety. Sounds like a lot of legal mumbo-jumbo, right? And here's it goes on further to say, and that safety should be adequately shown through scientific procedures. But here's what it doesn't say. It doesn't explain how that recognition of that safety should be carried out. So Congress, back in 1958, left it up to the FDA to provide details on who these experts could be, what their training or experience might look like, and more importantly, what role the FDA might have in confirming the validity of, you know, whether or not an ingredient is safe. So at first, the FDA maintained some control over that. So in the 50s and 60s, even right up until the 80s, the FDA did maintain some control over that, what they call GRAS process. But what happened is in 1997, the FDA gave up any claim to controlling that process, partially because they were completely overwhelmed with the number of new ingredients coming into the food supply, and therefore they basically just left it open. And so they basically ended up proposing new rules that gave the food and beverage industries the authority, get this, to self-certify that a new food chemical was safe, legally GRAS status, without any FDA oversight. Sounds crazy, right? We as consumers probably assume that if it's in our food supply, if we go to the grocery store, we pick up a can, a bottle, a box, and we see ingredients that are listed in that food supply, we're assuming, most of us, that those are ingredients that have been observed and looked at by the FDA and approved before they were added to the food supply. I'm here to tell you that the vast majority have not, and this is proof of that, because the FDA also created a voluntary, stress the word voluntary there, notification system through which a company could inform the FDA, if the company chose to do so, that it had determined a chemical to be GRAS status. So once that notice is submitted, by the way, the FDA basically has 30 days to review, and it can respond and say, hey, we've got some questions about this, and we really aren't sure, or they can just not respond at all. And then the manufacturer says, okay, we didn't get any letter from the FDA, they didn't show any objection, move forward, right? Is it any wonder why we have so many food additives, so many chemicals and things that are not natural in our modern-day food supply? So here's what's interesting. The third route is even more problematic, if you ask me, and that's given that these GRAS notices are entirely voluntary, right? A food company can simply choose not to notify the FDA after it makes a GRAS determination. So basically, they can just throw it in there, and the company then can start using the substance without the FDA's knowledge, let alone their approval, okay? So this is what's called in this GRAS world of the FDA, the secret GRAS pathway. The public can't know how many of these secret grass ingredients are in our food supply because there's been no requirement by our government to report them. Okay? That in itself is scary because now what we've got is we've got a food supply industry, mass food manufacturers, who because of this loophole have decided that, hey, we're going to say, based on our own testing, our own observations, and again, who knows what those are or how these food ingredients and additives were tested, that this is perfectly safe and that this is fine. And because the FDA has left this so wide open for so long, especially again since 1997, it's just crazy the amount of stuff that's in our food supply that quite honestly, nobody, including our federal government, knows what the long-term effects are. It's only through some of the studies that are now coming out, like what they're citing in regards to wanting to ban these new synthetic food dyes, that we're realizing these could be dangerous, not just short-term, but long-term, okay? And so why am I bringing this up to you? Because it underscores the importance for us as human beings to make the best possible decisions we can when it comes to the foods that we're eating and the beverages that we're drinking. Again, most of you, again, are already aware of this. You know this. If you're health conscious, you're already probably making efforts in this area. But if you think about it, again, I've said this a lot of times on calls like this, it's always better to eat foods that are more produced and processed by God rather than by man. Because, again, if we eat an organic banana as an example, well, it's a banana. There's no other additional ingredients to it. And, in fact, if it's organic, there's a very good chance that it's been treated with a lot more care and would have far less potential negatives, such as pesticides or other chemicals in that particular food, right? So we want to look at simple foods. We want to look at things that have less additives, less preservatives, less chemicals, less pesticides, because the more we tread into the mainstream food supply, what is called highly processed foods, which are abundant in our world today, the more risks we take. And it's because of what I just shared with you today that we don't know, meaning as a society, we don't know what those long-term risks are, because you can imagine since 1997 how many different things have possibly been added to the food supply that have virtually little to no real affirmation or confirmation from any authority or any regulatory body as to whether or not they really are safe in our human bodies. Right? And so why take the chance? Why make that a problem that you put into your own body if you have a choice? So my first message to you today is try to make those better health choices whenever possible. Your body will thank you. Long term, your health will be much better because of it. Number two is this. When it comes to Zuma and Zuma supplements, one of the things that you'll notice that we don't do at Zuma is we don't jump on the newest, hottest bandwagon of some new ingredient in the supplement world that just came on the scenes, right? Partially because this grass status loophole I told you about can also be exploited by the dietary supplement industry. So you've probably seen stories over the years in your life at this point where, you know, some crazy new supplement nutrient gets into the marketplace. It starts getting all kinds of attention. All of a sudden, there's a bunch of different supplement, you know, sellers that are rushing in the market with this new hot ingredient. And then all of a sudden, a short time later, we find out there was some danger in that supplement or that particular nutrient, you know, was originally thought to be safe, but now we're finding that it's not quite as safe as it once was thought to be. And now our FDA does step in those cases and they pull that nutrient out of supplements. They say it's no longer available to be used in the dietary supplement market because we found it to be dangerous, right? But it's usually once it's already out there and many people have taken it and it's almost too late at that point. So you'll notice that at Zuma, we never jump on the immediate bandwagon that says, okay, this is the hottest ingredient. It just popped on the scene, you know, 3-4 months ago. We got to get a product out in the market with it. We're always cautious about these things because we understand this loophole, again, also can be utilized in an unethical way in the dietary supplement industry. That's why you can count on when you're using Zuma's products, when you're taking Zuma supplements, what we're using in those products is proven to be healthy, safe, and effective. We're not just jumping on a new bandwagon, crossing our fingers, and hoping that this new ingredient will turn out to be safe for you and your consumption. We know when we formulate a product, we know the ingredients going into it, we know the sources. In fact, one of the things you see us do a lot in our formulations is we're using trademark, branded, clinically researched nutrients in our formulas, not because we necessarily think that we have to, but we know by doing that, two things are true. Number one is there's incredible amounts of data and study that's been done on those nutrients to prove, in fact, that they are safe and effective. Number two is we know through those clinical research trials, because of that branded ingredient, we know they're going to produce the kind of results that you as the customer expect and want from that product. So it allows us to produce products that really do make a difference in people's lives with the confidence of knowing what we're putting out into the marketplace is good, it's safe, it's healthy, and it's beneficial to you when you take it. That's one of the advantages you have as a Zuma member when you're using any of the Zuma products in our line. So I hope this was eye-opening and educational for you. Hope it encourages you to make better choices when you go to the grocery store next time. And more importantly, I hope it gives you that reassurance that when you're using Zuma's products, you're not taking those risks and those chances that this grass loophole with the FDA allows to take place in our world today.